Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, September 10th, 2015. This past week, I made a new product introduction on my webpage. Now, for me, this is very exciting. It's something that I have been searching for a long time. Let me preface this by saying, a long time ago, on my webpage, I had sold flax from Flax USA, great product. But for me, it was difficult to manage because it was so heavy. The flax shipments were very heavy, and they were. It's a great product, and I still refer people up there. But also, you can buy that in places like, you know, Sam's Club and things like that. So, number one, if you bought it from me, you'd have to pay for shipping, and number two, it's available other places. So anyway, I stopped selling that. People still write to me all the time and say, hey, where was that? Where did you get that from? And then I refer them up there. Great people, Flax USA up in North Dakota. I also sold Young Living Essential Oils, and that was a great product line, still is a great product line. But there were some things there that it just wasn't right for me, for my webpage, because my webpage was growing with my own particular product line of water filters, my books, my CDs, DVDs. I had so many products already. I also sold the freeze-dry food for quite a long time, and people bought that. That was great. But then the government stepped in and absorbed all of that product, and we couldn't get it anymore. And so anyway, that was one thing. But anyway, I have been looking for a health product. Now, there's boatloads of health products out there on the market, but I wanted something that I really liked. It's a single product. It's not a whole product line, a whole bunch of things. It's just one thing. And also, I identified with this particular product because I have lived part of my life in, you know, I travel around the world, I go to many places, and sometimes I stay in places for very extended periods of time. And in one place I stayed, it was near a volcano, and it wasn't an active volcano. In fact, I lived in Mexico City near two active volcanoes, but this is not what I'm talking about now. I lived in an area that the water came right out of the fresh mountain streams, and the food was locally grown, etc. But the point is that if you look at my pictures of 10, 15 years ago, my hair was thinning on top, etc. When I was at this place for about, you know, a period of 8, 10 months doing my research, my hair started growing back, and I'm going, what's going on here? What the heck's going on? And so I thought, well, you know, it's the minerals, it's the food, it's the, you know, everything organic, because it was in a primitive area and all the food was grown naturally without chemicals, etc. And I thought, you know, there's something to this. So anyway, and then a year and a half ago, I forget how long it was, I talked about an event that happened to me. I met this guy who had terminal cancer. And he had gone himself to an area in Mexico, to a location, where they treated him with fruit, where they basically cleansed him with fruit. He was very sick. He was on his deathbed, near dead, when he went there. So anyway, the final thing that he was taking, and this was like 20 years ago, he did not have to have his stomach cancer surgery. He was, for all practical purposes, I guess that means you're cured, although it's illegal to say that in the United States. You could get arrested for saying somebody was cured if they didn't take chemo or whatever the bloodletting therapies they do in the United States for cancer. But he was taking Durazno, which is a Mediterranean, Mid-Eastern origin apricot seed. It was taking the seed. It's like an almond type of seed inside the hard apricot casing. It's inside the apricot. Anyway, so I made an announcement about that, and I thought that was very interesting. But coming back to this idea that, you know, the food that you get in the grocery store, oh my goodness, you walk into the grocery store and it's boxes, there's in these boxes, there's no food value. There's no enzymes. There's, you know, the minerals that have been leached out. Probably the food that went into it in the beginning, the grains and the other food, what you would call primary foods, were grown with GMO foods and, you know, with ammonia fertilizers. And the plants look good. When you go across Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, you know, South Dakota, and you see that corn growing, vast, whole states full of corn, and it all looks really good, but there isn't an ounce of food value anywhere. You know, the fruit that we get is grown. It all looks wonderful in the grocery store, but there's no food value. And furthermore, the essential living food value, like enzymes, is simply not even there. So people are eating this food. I mean, the meat has, you know, I don't have to go on. You already know about all of this. So at any rate, this product that I found, it's called Via Viente, and it started, oh, maybe 15 years ago or more, probably more. A rich guy from Texas, from Dallas, went around, and he wanted, you know, it's the old story, looking for the fountain of youth. So that what they did is they went around the world to the various places where people lived a long time. Ended up in one place in southern Ecuador. And the little town there, the people were renowned to live many people over 100 years old. Very healthy. You know, of course, they're aged, but basically in good health, working out in the field every day. And, you know, basically great health. So they started examining what was going on there. What they noticed was that the water they were drinking, which was basically coming down the mountain in streams, had a complete complement of minerals. Okay, that's great. But then again, when you look at the ground, what had happened here was the volcanoes in the region had gone off and layered the area with minerals. A very good balance for the human body. Also, it was devoid of the heavy metals that are toxic to people. Also, the plants, the organic food that they were eating, grown right there, the fruits, the vegetables, etc., and then, of course, the grass that the animals ate and grazed, etc., was full of the, well, also of this proper balance of minerals. Now, some people drink demineralized water or water that distilled water. It's really terrible for you because it's leaching, literally leaching the minerals out of your cells, and it leaves you with a mineral deficient system. But also enzymes, that's something we've also learned in modern life, that antioxidants are super important, because they get rid of the free radicals. And, you know, here we are breathing oxygen, and in a sense, oxygen is a poison. So, you know, what happens with the oxygens is it creates free radicals, and, of course, oxygen is just tremendously damaging to anything. Oxidation is one of the most common factors that break down even metals in nature. So it's really destructive, and of course, in your body. So what we found is that by taking antioxidants, blueberries is one of the primary sources of antioxidants, and there's many other things out there. But at any rate, there's an essential kind of complement of foods that we know about that are very good. And so anyway, to make the long story short, what Via Viente did is they took and concentrated the mineralization in the water so that what you would normally drink in a liter, the mineral value in a liter, is concentrated down into 1 ounce of the liquid. And then they mixed into this the whole fruits. In other words, a lot of times we peel the fruit when we eat it, but it turns out that the outside, the shell of the fruit, or the crust or the cask or whatever you want to call it, the skin of the fruit, has the majority of nutrients. But many times we peel that off because that's so full of toxic chemicals that have been sprayed by modern agriculture that it's really poisonous. So we get this concept of removing the outside of like oranges etc. But really, in that is where a great deal of the nutrients lie. But if you have your fruit and vegetables, etc., from an area that does not have toxic chemicals, then you're dealing with, you should include the skins. I once had a guy tell me, this is in my kind of overweight days, and by the way, I lost about 60 pounds. You'll see some of my early pictures where I'm kind of a little bit heavier. I lost 60 pounds when I was taking flax. And that's because the oil in flax is a natural, it just emulsifies fat in your body. But also I was in this area where I was eating really good food. So that was part of the plan too. It wasn't just the flax, it was the, you know, balance of correctly mineralized water. But anyway, the product is called Viva Viente. Its mineralized water comes from this area of southern Ecuador, from the mountain streams. It's concentrated so that you have a high concentration, like I said, from a normal liter of water down to an ounce of the water. The same mineral content, and then mixed with the, I think it's 13 different fruits, vegetables, and roots that give you a balanced vitamins, minerals, enzymes, antioxidants, and like I say now, I don't know if I mentioned this, but the antioxidant value in 1 ounce of this is equal to a cup of blueberries. And so it's, you know, very high in antioxidant properties. And so the plan is you take a couple ounces of this a day, 2 ounces in the morning, 2 ounces in the evening, and it's just something that's very healthy for you, because simply we don't get this in regular food. So it's not taken as a food like vitamin. It's authorized by the FDA as simply a food supplement. And so anyway, that's a very important thing to understand. And of course, there are testimonials and all of that. I'm not going to go into that on the air. But I'm starting this because it's balancing out something that was missing for a long time from my product line, because I'm very interested in health. And I'm very interested in natural health, something that is from very natural sources. But the pure honest thing is, if you go to the grocery store and you buy the best vegetables, the best fruits that you can find, you're still really deficient. Plus, when you get older, your body absorbs less. So let me just kind of summarize what's been going on with me over the past, let's take a year, year and a half, something like that. My wing generator, let me just say this. I am trying to solve major problems in the world, and I'm targeting these major problems. A couple weeks ago, I introduced carrot bars, and I became a carrot bar vendor. All of that's on my webpage. I'm not going to talk more about that. My August 20th show, I concentrated on that topic. But it's a way for the average guy on the street to not only invest in gold in this fiat economy that we live in, but it's a way, the gold is spendable, it's usable. And right now, today, if you had carrot bars, you can spend them. And you think, well, gee, my local store doesn't take carrot bars. But with the MasterCard that they give you, you can literally spend the carrot bars that you have. And so, but the carrot bars come with the gold in it, and it's a little bit difficult to explain on the air. But if people are interested, just go to my webpage. All the information is there. But it solves a problem. It allows people to take their fiat money or some of it and exchange it into gold, which is spendable. It's a program that began in Germany about 7 years ago. They became a registered international corporation in 2011. Very high standards with the gold. It buys back. The carrot bar's buyback price is over $10 per gram over the buyback price for regular gold. And so it's costs more when you buy it, but the buyback price is way higher than regular gold buyback price. And also you can spend it. But you can spend it any place Visa or MasterCard is taken, because with the program you get a Visa or MasterCard. So what am I trying to do here? What does this have to do with science? Well, if you understand my wing generator project, for example, nearing commercial production completion, that targets the energy industry, and it does it. It goes right to the jugular vein. It goes right to the jugular vein of the energy industry. It'll take people off the grid, ranches, the people that live out at the electric line, the people that are on eco-villages, the people that are, the people that have the worst service, the people that are in third world countries that get horrible electric service, etc. This is the original target product. The 12-meter Pegasus model is targeted to that, and then soon we're already working on other models that are going to be commercialized after the Pegasus hits the street. So what am I doing? I'm targeting the energy industry. It's the number one problem in the world. That's what I'm targeting. You see what I'm doing? What am I targeting with carrot bars? The European bankers. What do we need? We need an economy where we can function without going to the central banking system. Okay, that's the carrot bars. What am I doing with Via Viente? You can't get good food. You cannot get nutrients, minerals, balanced enzymes. There's no enzymes in food anymore. And so antioxidants, you'd have to go out and find all of this yourself, put it together, and this is in a very nice package. So it solves something for me. It puts a product in my product line that has been vacant for a long time. I like the flax. It's still a wonderful product, but it didn't quite work for me. You can get it. In fact, I highly recommend that you go get flax. You can buy it at your, I don't know where all they sell it, but in your town or locale, you can find it. Flax USA, cold ground flax seed, and it's super for you. So I still recommend that, although I don't sell it anymore. Young Living, great products, but I don't sell it anymore. Freeze-dried food, still available. Many people still selling that. The freeze-dry guy out there still in California, he's still active. Great stuff, but I don't sell it anymore. But what I want is something that I can do long-term, and it's just one thing. That's what I liked about it. It's not a product line of 87 things, and you got to take this to, no. I needed something that was one thing, all-inclusive, and that is it, Via Viente. Anyway, go to my webpage and take a look at that. I'm very happy with this. I'm very proud of the fact that I am now selling this, and you can sign up to buy as a retail customer, or you can buy wholesale. And if you want, you could also become a distributor, but the majority of people probably will become retail customers or buy wholesale, where you get a pretty good discount. At any rate, I'm very excited about that. Like I say, it fills a gap in what I have been doing in the health-related product that I really believe in, because I've been there. I've been in the place where the food is good, people don't lock their doors, you drink the water right out of the mountain stream. Of course, I filter it to get the bacteria, etc., out. But the knowing that you're getting that mineral content that's really lacking in your local water, etc., that you're drinking, there's a lot of, by the way, my water filters do not take out the minerals. Remember that the minerals in the water pass through, but in many places you have a really strange imbalance of water. And so you're not getting your full complement of minerals. That's why Via Viente is really important, because it gives you a really high percentage of all the things you need on a daily basis. Just a quick note on this past week, the hurricane season in the Pacific continues. Imena, the hurricane of last week, still continues out there toddling along, but it's just a storm at this point, very, very low key, very low energy storm. There's a new storm, Linda, that developed this past week on the west coast of South America, or of the Central America, I'm sorry. But the sun, you know, for August is mildly active. So we do have, if you were in a sailboat, let's say you were in the equatorial region, any place in the world today, you know, we have the storm systems in Africa coming across, coming out into the Atlantics. But this is the kind of the heart of the hurricane season. That's where the whole central belt of the world is active. And so this is due to the fact we had a near miss of a solar flare this past week. But once again, after the solar flare passed, standard science says, oh, it passed. There it goes. Adios, amigo. Going away. And that's standard science. But no, what happens is after that flare gets out there, we react to that in discharging the solar capacitor. But the hurricane season this year, relatively mild. And the sun, pretty quiet, even though we've had some magnetic activity, etc. It was that week ago where I described all of those various factors. Listen to last week's show. We had all of those factors and also a little comet coming in that assisted one of the six factors that all added together to give us that blast of serious storms around the equator. But back to the guy in the sailboat around the equator, if you're out in the equator, you're probably being hit with small to medium-sized, fairly intense storms. Just a quick comment that I've seen quite a bit recently, and it's being pushed out in more venues. For example, the History Channel. I've seen this in glossy magazines that are supposedly dedicated to science, etc. But here's the story. When explosive volcanoes, boom, blow up, what causes that? Now, we have volcanoes all over the world. We have volcanoes that are under the ocean. What causes some of them to be explosive? Well, literally, there are two types of volcano, you have to understand. One is what we call the cinder cone volcano, and those are typically the explosive types. Although you have something like Yellowstone, which has a caldera which has sunken in, it's a lake over 50 miles across, and there's no huge cinder cone or there's no big lava flow because much of it has sunk into basically the cavern that remains after a big explosion. But what causes the explosion? And what it literally is water finds a path after the earthquakes and all the movement of Earth that goes at the time of a volcanic eruption. The water finds a chasm down in where it hits the magma. When water turns to steam at that temperature, it is called super steam. It's a class above regular steam like you have in a pressure cooker in your kitchen, etc. It's a whole different animal. In fact, they call it dry steam because it doesn't have the properties of water. Even steam that's in your pressure cooker has the properties of wet steam. But dry steam at super high pressure acts very different, and it converts water that it comes in contact with into superheated steam also. So it has some very strange properties, but the one property it does have is it is very explosive. You might be interested to know that your central power company has second and third stage accumulators where they take the energy that's released and they change. At the first stage, they have superheated steam. And as that's released, it cools, and then they use it again. They convert that leftover energy into electricity, and then there's actually a third stage. It's a third stage in many nuclear and coal-burning fired power plants, electrical power plants. But so super steam is something we use for our own uses, but it has to be well contained. It's highly, highly explosive stuff. And so anyway, when the water drops down, it hits the magma, kaboom, and there's no amount of dirt or earth and on top of that that's going to contain it. So boom, out it goes. It'll blow 60 miles high in the atmosphere, some of the big volcanoes. But why do some volcanoes not blow their top? Well, first of all, you have there's two types of volcanoes. As I was saying, there's the explosive type, the cinder cone type. Then there's the shield volcano, in which the lava simply oozes up and then spills out over the side and follows a path down the mountainside. And these are typically you'll see a lot of these in the Pacific Ocean and the Pacific Basin and other places around the world. But the point is that as this builds up layer upon layer, even though these volcanoes are in the water or associated with the water, like the Hawaiian volcanoes, for example, are associated with oceans. I mean, their bases are in the ocean. The water cannot get down to that central tube to go the flow, so to speak. The flow is outbound, and there's no way for the water to get down into the magma. And so that's why those types of volcanoes are not explosive, although they can be. But the type of explosions are relatively mild. They're not the kind that take the top off and blow it 60 miles up into the air. Down in Chile, we have some very explosive volcanoes in the upper peninsula of Kamchatka of Russia, also very explosive volcanoes. And this is getting back to Yellowstone, something I talk about a lot. The lake at Yellowstone, now let's look back at the history of Yellowstone. It's probably had close to 30 eruptions where there were known, you know, it was dormant for a while and then it became an erupting volcano. The three extreme explosive volcanoes of the Yellowstone Basin occurred when there was a lake there. Well, doggone, that's an empirical association that tells you that, well, the big explosive ones occur when there's a lake there. Well, what does the lake sitting on top of the land have to do with an explosive volcano down deep in the Earth's core, in the crust and mantle, where the water can get down into those levels, become steam, and then blow the top off? But here's the problem. As I was saying in the History Channel and other venues that I've seen recently, The geologists are talking about the concept that the chemicals that explode, the explosive gases, etc., somehow come up with the material, with the magma that's coming up through the tube. Well, if that were the case, we'd have explosive volcanoes in every volcano, which is simply not the case. The explosive volcanoes are associated with eruptions and earthquakes where it breaks and there are fault lines where the water can find its way down. And once it starts hitting the magma, then you start getting bigger eruptions where it'll explode and then drop back down and open up other chasms where the water can get in, and then boom. So this is the cycle of explosive volcanoes. The problem is that now the standard Tier 2 scientific community is bent on this idea that somehow explosive volcanoes, that it's due to the gases coming up in the vent, which is totally incorrect. By the way, some people have asked me to talk about this idea that ringwoodite somehow contributes to our water. And there's a little teeny piece of rock come from a diamond field, and there's no indication that that piece of ringwoodite came from the center of the Earth at all. I mean, that's number one. They publish this, and first it gets hyped in the media. this is not science. This is not how science is done. Where is the proof that, you know, any of this has any validity at all? And so then they go off on a wild goose chase making estimates of some volume of this in the center of the Earth, and then they claim that there's oceans of water there. You know, it is just so beyond absurd, and the water isn't even water. It's a component of hydrogen and oxygen in the rock. It's not water. So, I mean, you know, silly science, simple Simon, silly science, it's exactly what it is. But, you know, nothing more, nothing less. A question came in from a listener, and I really liked this topic, so it gave me, many times I talk about black holes and the fact that general relativity has no validity at all, and all of the reasons. My DVD course number 4, which is the dealing with astronomy, astrophysics, and space science, it's kind of an overall cosmological picture based on the fact that, first of all, my induced electric dipole redshift shows what is the true cause of redshift in the universe. Also, the X-ray activity around black holes, etc. And so the question was, what do I think they are measuring? First of all, what are they measuring? And then what's actually going on? Well, all they're seeing are X-rays. And one point that I make is that if you have X-rays being caused by matter being sucked into a black hole, as it goes into the black hole, as it's accelerated, so to speak, then it should have a increasing redshift on the spectrum. In other words, as you're looking at material that's first starting to be sucked into the alleged black hole, there should be a certain redshift. And as it gets closer to the black hole, it should be speeding up. So that would give a different redshift. So you should have this continuum of spectrum of the same line all the way to the point where it disappears. And that would be at probably close to the speed of light going into the black hole. And so it'd be an extreme redshift, but this would be a continuum of redshift starting from the actual X-ray line, spectral line. You don't see this at all. And so the question is, what are they seeing? And the answer is that they're seeing electrical activity. And this is something I talk about. I talk about it in the comet work. One of my main predictions for the activity of comets was that there should be X-rays to the sunward side of comets, about, you know, 20, 30,000 miles into the sunward side. When that electron beam comes in from the sun, starts interacting with the environment, the atoms and molecules in the environment, and also you should be seeing high-energy ultraviolet light, etc. And that's what you do see. You see high ultraviolet X and up into the X-ray region, light being emitted from that region far to the sunward side of comets, of comet nuclei. When you look out into outer space, what they're seeing, all they are seeing are X-rays. And the X-ray activity is electrical because you have the same comet discharge properties, the same phenomenon, the discharge of a fusion-based capacitor in the vicinity of, for example, galactic nuclei. So what are they seeing? Well, they're seeing the any fusion-based object creates a proton wind, an excess current of protons, that creates a capacitor, and things in that region of the capacitor discharge the capacitor. So you can get X-ray activity down at the core region where the fusion is, or you can get X-ray activity of any object that's up in the capacitor and discharging the capacitor. So that's what they're seeing. And of course, there's no possibility for anybody to get in a word in edgewise. The standard scientific community has got its mold, it's got its story, and it's sticking to it. That's simply the issue. I talked last week about the Stephen Hawking's information loss issue, where he... I'll just listen to last week's show. I don't want to repeat all of that. The idea that if information goes into a black hole, what happens to it? I talked about that last week. There are some definite problems with the concept of black holes, the Big Bang, etc. and it's simply called the mass loss problem. If you have objects such as quasars, which are the supposedly the biggest, most massive objects because they're the brightest, and if they flew the farthest, the fastest after the alleged Big Bang, then they have been losing this mass for 4.5 billion years. So if you go in retrospect, go back 4.5 billion years, and then understand that there's a exponential curve, a cooling curve over this time, that means that these objects were immensely, immensely massive, and but the end result is that when you convert the mass into energy equals mc squared, there's simply not enough mass to go around. And it's a problem that is simply ignored when they start talking about cosmology. When we look at elves and sprites, these are the activity above thunderclouds. I just saw another fairy tale science article coming out where they go, advancements in the electrical earth circuit. And it starts out by saying, an assumption is they have no proof for it, that thunderclouds generate the electric energy that we see in the atmospheric environment. Totally, totally incorrect. They have sent aircraft, they have sent probes up into the middle of thunderclouds. There's no electric field. And why isn't there electric field? Because in the middle of a conductor, which is a thundercloud is a very good conductor, in the middle of a conductor, the electric field is zero. Basic physics, electromagnetic physics 101. If you have a container, which a cloud is, it's a vapor container. If it has a charge of any kind on it, that charge will be distributed around the outside edge of it. Simple. And the field to the inside will be zero. That's exactly what they measure. So how does this magical electricity get generated in something that has perfectly zero electric field? Well, it doesn't. Once again, simple Simon Silly science. Why are there all the way up to gamma rays above thunderclouds? You typically see X-rays, ultraviolet light. Elves and sprites are manifestations of the electric fields acting above the thunderclouds and acting of, on the environment there. But what's going on? When you see a picture of an elf, and that's a basically a lighting activity above a thunderstorm, it starts from above and works its way down to the cloud. There's there's never been a sprite or an elf that's been discovered that starts at the thundercloud and goes up. It starts up and comes down to the cloud. And so, anyway, these people, you know, I just can't even imagine what these people are thinking, but clearly they're not thinking at all. They got a PhD, somebody taught them something in a textbook, they're repeating it, and, you know, I've gone to scientific meetings. I was in a meeting at American Geophysical Union meeting one time. My presentation happened to be in the high energy plasma group for dealing with the sun. And I came upon a table. This was kind of after hours I was walking through. There were two scientists at a table, and they were kind of had their heads down, you know, end of a long day at the American Geophysical Union meeting. And I stopped and I talked to them for a second. And they were people who opposed the magnetohydrodynamic concept of how the sun works. And I didn't quite know it at the time, but I made a quick comment, and they said, yeah, that doesn't work. But they said, we can't get a word in edgewise because the politics of publication. And, of course, once a group with a theoretical concept gets a hold of the reins of the so-called peer-reviewed journals, the respectable peer-reviewed journals, well, then that's the only thing that gets published. Nobody else gets to get a word in edgewise. And they were reminiscing about that particular fact to me. They knew who I was. And so I know these people look at me like, How does this guy do this? He's not associated with NASA. He does his own work. And, I don't have anything to do with those people. They're all lunatics, idiots, because that's tier two science. And so, anyway, just a comment here. I wanted to finish this topic. The listener asked, what are they seeing? So is there an object there? Is there a black hole there? Well, there's an object there, and typically you can't see it. Well, why can't you see it? It's because many times these objects are really small. They're discharging the solar capacitor, or the galactic capacitor. It's like trying to see a comet nucleus. They are extremely, extremely small, and of course they're hidden in a haze. So what you're seeing when you look up at a comet at the sky and you see the tail and the white part, etc., what you're seeing is the cloud that surrounds the nucleus, but the nucleus is a little teeny thing typically. They can be big. They can be up to Jupiter size, but that's not typically the kind we see in the solar system. The majority of comets are small, the vast majority of them. And so you're not going to see the nucleus. If you look at the cover of my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, it's clear that in history, there's a picture of a handwritten petroglyph from Green River, Utah, but there's two comets in the drawing. One has a nucleus that's very large, and the other does not have a nucleus at all, which indicates, I was talking about this with James Fetzer, and he said his belief is that that's two different comets because they actually look a bit different. And so that's something I've said from the very beginning, is that a lot of times we'll have multiple big comets in the sky at once. And that was the case with Hale-Bopp, that it had a companion. And one of my parts of my Christmas lecture was that I had this lecture with Brad Walton many, many years ago, the Christmas Star lecture, that the Christmas Star had to be a very unusual comet. There had to be something highly unusual about it. And the only thing really that you can see from a distance, if you were the three magi, the only thing really that you could see was another companion. So it's basically a comet orbiting a comet. And clearly that's what they were seeing. So it wasn't an inferior conjunction of a planet or some kind of alignment of planets. No, this was a very, very, very special comet that they were looking for. So I hope that covers this topic. It's basically you're seeing electrical discharges of the fusion-based capacitor around a galaxy or a quasar. And also the redshift is caused by the fact that the object which is charged, the light that's leaving that object, is moving through a non-uniform electric field, and the light is redshifted. So anyway, that's what you're seeing. That's the end result. So you may not see, and in the case of people who talk about black holes, well, of course, you can't see a black hole because not even light can escape. Once again, here's the problem. You can't get a black hole into your laboratory, and you can't get closer to it in outer space. So all of the data relative to so-called black holes is second and tertiary, third level data. It's not real direct data. I just saw a thing where they're talking about CERN creating a black hole in a laboratory. Well, I hope they don't, because black holes tend to suck up everything around them, and that would include Earth and you and me and the moon eventually and everything. So I hope they're not creating black holes in the laboratory. Not a good plan. But there again, there is no such thing as black holes. So science, mad scientists at its best. I'm going to continue now a topic that I talked about a few weeks ago, because as I've talked to people in the past week, and this, by the way, has given me a really good insight into my listening audience, talking to them about carrot bars, also talking about Via Viente, the liquid that you can drink, food supplement. And it's really interesting talking to people. Many people have commented about my discussion of multiple streams of income and free living. Now, this is really important because I was just talking. These are some things that were feedback that came back to me from listeners that I talked to. So I'm going to read these off. Remember that these are comments that came from listeners relative to me saying multiple streams of income and free living. And free living, what's that? That means you got your house, your car, your other basic expenses paid for, and you're probably growing a lot of your own food. You probably have a well. So free living means that your basics are covered. And, of course, you're going to always have expenses in the real world. But free living means that primarily your basic expenses, your car is paid for, your house is paid for, where you live is relatively inexpensive because you're not paying those giant interest fees. So anyway, once again, here are comments that came back to me from you people out there. This is one that says, freedom. In adversity, you can walk away from it all and be secure in what you with what you have. So that's very interesting. I'm going to read it again because I was writing this down. I was talking to this guy. Freedom. It means in adversity, you can walk away from it all and be secure with what you have. In other words, what you have left over. Like people in the stock market or things like that. Investing is a very risky business today, and especially in the standard investment portfolio. In your standard portfolio, what you're investing in is very, very risky. It reminded me of a song from the Broadway play, the Gershwin. This is back in, 1920s. Porgy and Bess was a Gershwin, and the name of the song is I Got Plenty of Nothing. And it takes place down on the bayou, probably in Louisiana, I'm guessing. A lot of my favorite music from this play. And the words go something like this. I may have it not quite right, but it says, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. A rich man got a lock on his door while he's out there making more. Something about worried about the people stealing his stuff while he's out there making more. Yeah, and I don't have that quite exactly right, but that's the sentiment. George Gershwin. Self-induced slavery. You go 12 to 16 years of school, and you think you're developing for a career, but what you're doing, you don't have freedom to choose and become a free person. You have freedom to choose the kind of slave you're going to be. So I like that, and I added the comment that education buttonholes people, and it seems that the farther up you go, the worse it gets. But basically, it limits you to what you can be in life. And that is one reason I didn't go on to get a PhD. I was at Tulane University, got my master's degree. My advisor said, hey, you know, stick around a couple years, you'll get your PhD. And I said, no. I don't want a PhD. I want to go out and see the world again, which I did. I went and taught physics, mathematics, and computer science in a foreign country for 4 years. That's what I did after I got my master's degree in a foreign language. And so, the education can put a box around you, and that's what you got to be for the rest of your life. If you have a PhD in something, and this is how they trap people to do whatever they want them to do. If you got a PhD in something, if that's the only thing you can get a job in, and if you're not in that, I mean, imagine going into McDonald's to try and be a manager, and they go, well, sir, PhD and, whatever. You're a little overqualified for the job, and you go, well, I have to feed my family. I don't have a job, and, I have nothing to do. This is the guy with the PhD talking. And they go, well, sorry, but as soon as you get a job, you're going to leave this job, so we're not going to hire you. End result, you're buttonholed. You're that. I mean, you are what you are educated for and nothing else. And that puts a limit. And also, there's an upper limit to what you can make in terms of money. The richest people in the world, a lot of them quit college to become businessmen. They quit, they became businessmen, they made their fortunes doing whatever they do. But how many people who are working in education or in university or whatever make a lot of money? Well, they don't. There's a cap, and they, some of them make pretty good money relative to the average guy down the street, but still it's a cap on what you can make. There are people that make in a day what a university professor makes in a year. There are people that don't have any education at all. So, yeah, don't think that education is a ticket to ride. It ain't. In fact, I've heard that enrollment in many colleges all across the country in the U.S. are going down because students are not willing to sign on the line for student loans because they're going to have this big bundle of debt when they get out. And if they don't get a job, those banks go after you, your parents, everybody in the, you know, that you're related to. Also, schooling breaks the spirit. Religion does that too. The families, parents, etc. There's a lot of negative input into people today that want to do something outside of the box. You're encouraged to study hard, get good grades, become something in school. And so the people who regurgitate what you're taught, even though 95% of it is completely absurd baloney, 95% of it, but you're encouraged to learn that, get your grades, get promoted, go up to high school, then college, and then you do the same thing, and then you go out and get a job. But all it does is assures you that you're going to be working inside the box. People don't know how to take care of themselves. Remember, these are comments coming back from you out there. People don't know how to take care of themselves. They have the one job, the one stream of income. If they don't have that, they got nothing. And they're crying in the beer, so to speak. That's an expression. Because they're how could life do this to them? They did everything right. They went to school. They got good grades. They got degree, they went to college, they got married, they married somebody with, doctor, lawyer, good income. All of a sudden, they're sitting there with nothing, and they don't know the first thing about how to take care of themselves. You know, they buy their food from the grocery store, they all the supplies for the house, whatever. If it weren't for that paycheck from that one job, they're lost. They don't know where to go, where to turn. And then they look at the government for help. People with PhDs are completely brain dead. They have been zombieized. By the time they get a PhD, you look at them, and I've seen this. I go to scientific meetings, and these young, fresh PhDs, they got their nice new clothes on, and they're young. You can tell it's probably their first discussion at a scientific meeting. And they have their first paper possibly, where they get their name at the end of the list of 10 guys, but they get to present the paper, and this is a big thing for them. You ask them a single question, and they can't answer it. They look at you, they give you a blank stare, like you're the man from Mars, and they can't think on their feet. All they know is what they learned in their textbook or in their PhD thesis or whatever. There's the lie that you are free. this is once again another comment from a listener. You only get to choose the type of the category of slavery that you want to be in. Once again, that's another person commenting. But it's a lie that you are free. You simply get to choose the type of slavery that you you're free to choose the type of slavery that you want to be in. Anyway, so going back to multiple streams of income and free living, there are groups of people all over the world who are just stepping out. They're just stepping off the rat race, off the merry-go-round, or whatever you want to call it. But to do that, I've told people, get multiple streams of income. Something might be doing good one week, and the other things are not doing very good, while other things might be doing good at different times. But multiple streams of income. If you don't have it, you're limiting yourself. And also, if you have, say, a farm where you can grow all your own food, you have your farm paid for, your car is paid for, etc., then you're going to have some extra left over to actually start investing, so to speak. And most people out there don't have any money to invest. And so that's a problem. But if you learn how, in this world, there are opportunities. And let's look at opportunities. Let's go back to the 1930s, the Great Depression. You know what did well? Things that cost a quarter. One thin quarter. Say the movies. You could go for an hour or hour and a little over an hour. The movies were shorter back then. And go into a non-reality world for a quarter. And that's what the people did. There are many other examples. But in a business where everybody wants a little piece of that, whatever it is, that is a good business. T-shirts is a good business. I don't particularly sell T-shirts, but I have friends that do. They've been successful in this for their entire career. But everybody will buy a T-shirt. You know, that's something that's anybody can buy. If you look at my books, little kids buy them, big, you know, like grandmas and grandpas buy them, truck drivers, PhDs in all types of different fields. Everybody buys my books. I don't think there's a category or a country that my books have not been sold into. They're for everybody. How about the water filters? The same situation. They're for everybody. Everybody can literally use those. And so that's a good product. About the Via Viente that I mentioned earlier, excellent product. It's for little kids. It's for adults. It's for for everybody, no matter what the age, no matter what your condition, because it's what you would eat if you had the best food available. And it's also another form of multiple stream of income. It's not the end all. It's not the end of the world. It's not the only thing you're going to do in your life. But you better have good nutrients. You better have good health. And I don't care how much money you make. If you don't have good health, buddy, you're hurting. You don't have much at all. So anyway, when I talked at the earlier part of the show about what I'm doing now, I'm rounding out what I do in my life, and I'm passing it on to you. Hopefully people understand that. The wing generator, all of these things that I'm working on, hopefully solve some of the major problems. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.